You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 26, Interns with Spears. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the Trek Nation Director's Log, Trek Corps' SD HD analysis of TNG Remastered, the new issue of Star Trek Magazine, Star Trek Online Season 5, movie rumors, and we'll preview two more tracks from 5-Year Missions Year 2. In the feature, we're joined by Michael Fisher to discuss the Galileo 7. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
I'm doing fantastically, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, hanging in there. We are finally having a little bit of winter feel here going, and also got a nice little jolt this morning around 6:30 a.m.
Oh, really?
It's one of those cases where it's actually quite strong, but I was just starting to wake up, and it was really, really short. Oh. And it was one of those cases where then at breakfast, my wife and I are saying, I said, did you feel the earthquake this morning? And she said, was it an earthquake? I wasn't sure. So that's, you know, that's our typical attitude here in Japan when these earthquakes happen.
Man,
was it a delivery truck going by or was it an earthquake? We're not
sure. Truck or earthquake? That was always the question. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, aside from earthquakes, for me, my newest thing is this new microphone. Hopefully people will notice my deluxe sound quality. But I had an interesting experience yesterday. I went to the Apple Store. You know, I had my headphones on. I walk into the Apple Store, pull out the Apple Store app on my iPhone. I scanned the microphone I wanted to buy, and I bought it right there on my phone with my Apple ID. And I just walked out of the store. I didn't talk to a single person. It was the weirdest experience. I said on Twitter, I feel like a shoplifter. But I swear, I actually paid for this microphone.
Yeah, I heard they were going to do that, and it's kind of surreal that I would assume that they have someone watching you. Maybe they have elves, you know, as we approach the Christmas season, maybe some of Santa's elves are hiding behind the products on the shelves just to make sure that you're really paying.
I'm thinking there's a guy at the front desk or the front door who has an iPad, and I'm thinking he gets like a push notification that like, you know,
probably
somebody's going to walk by with a blue Yeti microphone. Don't stop him. He has paid for it. Don't worry. Just wave and let him pass on by.
But, yeah. It must be something like that. They have to have some kind of... Because otherwise, there would be major shoplifting going on, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if only they'd had this technology in Encounter at Farpoint, Beverly could have bought that what was it? It was that fabric without talking to the creepy salesman. I mean, think
of all
the fabric she could have bought if he hadn't been giving her that weird look the whole time.
Yeah, she could have bought it and taken it with her right there on the spot.
Exactly.
No need to have it delivered to my ship.
Yep.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, so, you know, it turned out, heading into the week, I was thinking that we were going to end up having to talk pretty much about the same stuff that we talked about last week, because it seems to be that the only thing in Star Trek news recently are movie rumors, but... in the end, we had a number of stories that come up. So why don't we talk about the first one? Now, the first one relates to Trek Nation, and that premiered last Thursday or Wednesday, I believe it was, November 30th, right? On Science Channel. Now, obviously, I didn't get to see it being in Japan, and I understand, Greg, that you don't have cable, right? So you don't have Science Channel.
We get cable internet, but no actual television. All the television that comes into our house comes through the PS3. In the form of Netflix or Hulu. So as soon as Trek Nation gets on Netflix or Hulu or even iTunes, I will jump on it.
Yeah. For me, it will be iTunes, probably. Mm-hmm. Maybe Hulu. We do have Hulu in Japan now, apparently, although I haven't tried it out yet. And I don't know if I will. But Netflix, for you guys over in the States, seems like probably the first destination.
I'm
just guessing. You know, that you might be able to get your hands on it. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But one thing we wanted to let everyone know about this week is that if you haven't listened to Matterstream, our other show, go catch that episode because I talked to Rod Roddenberry about Trek Nation on that show. And one of the things he mentioned to me is how much footage they shot that couldn't get into the show because obviously with the time limitations, they had to trim out a lot of very good footage. So now director Scott Colthorpe, who directed Trek Nation, is putting a lot of these clips that didn't make the cut for the show onto YouTube. And these are being collected on the Trek Nation YouTube channel.
Yeah, I watched a couple of them. It was interesting, a lot similar to the talks that William Shatner had with the captains, you know. It's always great to hear these people, these actors, talk about their experience of joining the Star Trek family and what it meant in their lives, you know. I know what Star Trek means to me, and I know what it means to a lot of the other fans, but it's sometimes really interesting to hear what it meant to the actual actors that were involved, how it really changed their life and their outlook on acting and even, you know, being a person in Hollywood or even the United States.
Oh, absolutely. And same goes for William Shatner's documentary, The Captains, where we got to hear a lot of the background of how those actors came to be part of Star Trek as well. So again, we won't talk a whole lot about Trek Nation right now because we've talked about it a lot on previous shows, but we did want to let everyone know that this new content is available. And if you go to youtube.com/TrekNation, you can find all the clips as they're added. I think right now what we have, Nichelle Nichols, Patrick Stewart, Michael Piller, and Futurama writer David Goodman on there as well. And so Nichelle Nichols is talking about the modern impact of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Stewart is talking about stepping into William Shatner's shoes. I don't think he means literally. Like, right. I don't think that they actually had a pair of William Shatner shoes on the set. But we may find out, you know, when we get to the enhanced TNG Blu-ray editions, we might be able to spot those.
Well, I'm sure you've seen the original Next Gen pilot where Patrick Stewart was actually playing Kirk later on in his career.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, okay. That's gonna have it's gonna be on the next level Blu-ray DVD, right?
Oh, it will be. I'm sure. You know.
Yeah.
These. Okay. Give me about 5 minutes, and then I will do my Patrick Stewart as William Shatner impression. I need to warm up to it, but we'll circle back to that.
Okay. Well, let's make sure we come back to that. All right. So, why don't we come back to it when we get to the end of our next story here, which is to let everyone know that TrekCore has done a very nice analysis of the second TNG HD trailer that was released and has compared that to the original DVD release of The Next Generation.
Yeah, this was really cool. You know, it's one thing just to see video from the HD version. It's another thing to see really close side by side. I didn't realize the extent to which the film had really been cleaned up. You know, it's something that happens with film and video. It just, the colors get off and you really have to go back there and fix them. And it's really impressive. There's the thing that really stood out to me was the very basic shot of Patrick Stewart saying, you know, engage. But there it is, the blacks have been cleaned up. The reds look better. The whites look like whites. It's, you know, it's, looks like it was just shot yesterday, and it's really impressive on a level that I didn't realize. I thought they just sort of put it on there, and I thought, oh, this is boring. I want to see what the space shots look like.
Oh, for sure. And now, Greg, you forgot to tell me something, apparently. I didn't realize that the Ready Room had a new sponsor, and it sounds like Tide has come on as a sponsor here because the blacks are blacker than ever. The whites are white. I mean, wow. It's great to know that we've been recognized by by the laundry companies now.
Patrick Stewart's head has a sheen that just wasn't there before the power of Tide.
That's, oh gosh. So they're scrubbing Patrick Stewart's head with Tide. They're doing.
Oh,
goodness. All right. Well, but you're right. You know, these are the things that when we watched the second trailer, we talked about, I guess it was last show, we were talking about how we were kind of disappointed with that second trailer. Like, they just didn't show the kinds of things we wanted to really see the difference of. And but then when TrekCore takes them and puts them side by side like that, suddenly you can see how much better that stuff looks.
Yeah. 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 I actually, so this week I ordered the complete Battlestar Galactica Blu-ray set from Amazon.
Oh,
they were doing a sale, was on sale for $99, which is that's great considering a Blu-ray movie is usually 30 or 40. And one interesting thing about that is Ron Moore talks about how you watch the Blu-ray, you know, the 1080p version of the show, and that's better than he ever saw it when they were editing the show. Because they edited the whole show at standard definition, sometimes even just 4:3. He didn't even see the widescreen version, especially early on. And I imagine this is going to be similar to that, where the people involved in the making of these shows have literally never seen it this high quality. Which has got to be, you know, stunning for some of these directors who have only seen video of the film they shot for, you know, 20, 25 years.
Oh, for sure. And Jonathan Frakes is going to watch it and go, man, was my shoulder really tilted that far? I never noticed it with the blurry images that we had before. I had some real swagger back then.
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But for sure. For sure. Oh, well, that's cool that you got the BSG Blu-rays. I've been looking at them, but God, they're so pricey normally.
Unfortunately, I waited until later in the day to order it, and it's probably not going to come until the new year because everyone else jumped on that. I imagine it's going to be one of the biggest selling Christmas presents among our circles, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Except for the new Tide Headshine formula, which is going to be a great stocking stuffer this year.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, well, I've been wanting to get the TOS Blu-ray sets, but I keep watching them and the price is just, it's just too much because for one thing, I would have to pay for the shipping to get them over here. They're suddenly not available here anymore. They are available here now. But suddenly the U.S. Amazon can no longer ship this product outside of the U.S. Used to, they could. Now they can't because now we can order them from Amazon Japan for about 2.5 to 3 times what they cost in the U.S. So I'm kind of screwed on that for right now.
That's too bad.
Anyway, but... Before
we move on, I did want to mention next week on Trek Corps, they will be doing a comparison of the flute scene, stereo versus 7.1. And you're really going to be able to see the difference on a level that you weren't able to before. So look forward to that. We'll be talking about it next week.
Right. Yeah. You're not going to hear the difference. You will see the difference.
Well, until you can see the difference, you don't really hear it.
Right. I think what it is like, you're not sure exactly what note Picard may be playing, but in the high definition, you can very clearly see which holes he's covering with his fingers. It's really going to just make that scene the emotional bond you have with Picard there is going to be so much stronger in HD.
Right. It's going to, you know, sort of like Rocky Horror Picture Show, we're going to start bringing our flute to the Blu-ray and we're going to be playing along with Picard. And it's going to give us that emotional connection to the scene, to the emotions. It's really going to take it to the, quote, next level.
Absolutely next level. I'm now picturing like these viewing parties, and in the room, there are like 10 or 12 Next Generation fans, and they all have the flute, and they're all huddled around playing along to this scene at the end of The Inner Light.
All right.
Well, so Greg, I told you I couldn't get the Blu-rays shipped over here, you know, to Japan anymore. But one thing that I can now get more easily than ever before is Star Trek Magazine. And that's thanks to the Xenio Digital Edition.
Ah, yes. So how is Star Trek the magazine these days? You know, I used to read the Voyager magazine that I guess was bi-monthly, but it had breakdowns of each episode. You know, that had aired between when you got the magazine and the next one. It had behind the scenes. It had interviews. It was fantastic until they discontinued it sometime in the fourth or fifth season or something. Don't correct us, please. Somewhere mid show they canceled it, and I've been really disappointed because I enjoyed getting that sort of behind the scenes look. So what are they covering in Star Trek the magazine these days?
Well, of course, there's always a little bit about the movies coming out because that's where the news is. But, you know, they've kind of taken to going back and looking at past episodes. They have a feature called The 45s now, which they take three, it's usually three per issue, I believe, and they go back and they just examine past episodes. In this issue, they're looking at Coda, Concerning Flight, and Timeless from Voyager. And they're really nicely done in terms of the layout and the design of the magazine. Mm-hmm. They're like just a two-page spread covering that episode, in the case, Coda or Concerning Flight, which is nice. And then they do features. This issue, you are probably going to want to try to get the comic store alternate cover edition. I'm quite certain because this issue is dedicated to Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
Oh, really? Wow. Does it have all of my favorite scenes with Spock swimming with the, was it Gracie? I believe it was George and Gracie.
Yeah, George and Gracie, and,
It has the scene on the bus. Oh, I love the scene on the bus where the guy gives him the middle finger and then he sort of does the Vulcan neck pinch and then everybody claps. Oh, it's my favorite.
I bet. You have the deluxe recording of that song, I think, don't you?
In 7.1 sounds, yeah, in 7.1 sound.
Do you play along with it with your flute?
Well, you haven't heard it until you've heard my flute solo.
So I haven't seen the alternate cover, but because like with comic books, Star Trek magazine, they do a special cover. I'm not sure if it's comic book cover. I think it's for subscribers actually that receive it. I'm not sure if it's the shot of Spock in his underwear or not. It may be. I know we have a lot of friends on Twitter who would scoop that up in a second if so. but anyway, this issue, here's what they're covering, of course, Star Trek IV, because of it being the 25th anniversary of Star Trek IV. They have a long interview with Scott Bakula where he talks about Enterprise. He talks about how the events of 9/11 kind of changed the show a bit, and then how the show evolved. There's a feature on Scotty where they examine his service record and they talk about whether he was really a miracle worker. Or not, and I think he has to be because anyone who can take radioactive material from an aircraft carrier and use them to recrystallize dilithium so that they can have a second drug trip around the sun is a miracle worker.
Definitely, or looking forward to the feature, someone who can take phasers and convert their power to power a shuttlecraft. I mean, that's
exactly,
you can't find that in a technical manual.
No, you can't. I mean, I don't think Geordi would even come up with that idea, personally. No.
Geordi would use his visor and look at the phasers, but he wouldn't know what to do with them.
Right. He would recommend like a deflector dish blast or something, right?
Oh, sure. That always works.
And then you would say, well, we don't have a deflector dish on the shuttle. And he would say, oh, well, I don't know. Maybe we'll just eject the warp core. And
well, Chris.
Well, if the warp core worked, we wouldn't be stuck here. So. Exactly.
You know what, Chris? You know what Geordi does when someone throws a spear at him?
Oh, he does a barrel roll.
The barrel roll. The barrel roll.
Oh God, we walked right into that, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
All right. So back to the magazine. Also, for our Enterprise fans, the first chapter of Michael A. Martin's new book, To Brave the Storm, is featured in here. And then for comic fans, there's a feature. It's actually in the review section, but they're talking to IDW about the new ongoing series. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the genesis of the series, how it came about. And where they're going with that. So it's a really interesting issue, as it always is. And if you can grab it on the newsstand, that's great. And if you can't, this Xenio edition that's out is really nice. You can read it on your computer, PC or Mac. You can read it on your iOS devices. I'm not sure if they have an Android app. I don't think so, but they may. For me, it's great. I mean, if you're in a situation like I am where what I've been having to do in recent years is go to a very specific bookstore in Tokyo that gets a Star Trek magazine and hope that I could get a copy.
Right.
Because they would get a limited number of copies and they would, sell out very quickly. So if you're not there at the right time, then you're not able to get it. And also you're paying I was paying like 1,800 yen,
right,
which is about $24 for a copy of this magazine if I could get my hands on it. But now I can get it through Xenio for, I think I paid like $4 maybe for it, something
oh, wow.
like that. I mean, it's nothing. It's like, yeah. I feel after so many years of paying, you know, like $20 to $25 for this magazine, I feel like I'm getting it for free now because right. I get it through Xenio. This is very cool.
Yeah, I should try to get it on my iPad and flip through it. That's one thing I've never really gotten into is reading comic books on these devices, even though I just got a copy of Avenging Spider-Man number 1, and it comes with a code to download just a copy of the comic to my iPad or iPhone through, I think it's that, it's not Xenio, it's the Comixology app. Mm-hmm. I haven't even put in the code to see what it looks like, but I bet it's really nice, and especially for collectors who would rather not touch their comic but just read it, it's a great option. But it's just something I've never quite gotten into.
Yeah, it does take some getting used to for sure. You know, I'm big on ebooks, but I have had some trouble getting into magazines. But in cases like this one, where it's so much easier for me to get it and so much cheaper, I've kind of embraced it. And the Xenio app works quite well, you know, especially on the desktop. They have a very nice air-based app for desktop.
Nice.
That's great. So anyway, if you go over to Xenio.com, you'll find it. You may need to search for Star Trek Magazine, or you can go to our site and we have, you know, we post previews there and you can find a link to it there as well. Yeah. And we'll put a link in the show notes.
Very cool. So Chris, there was one thing I wanted to mention that didn't actually make it onto the news page just because it was kind of late breaking, but I've talked before about Doug Drexler, who was an effects artist, art department guy on Deep Space Nine way back in the day. And he has this blog that he really sporadically updates, so it's hard to actually follow when he actually updates, but he just recently finished work on the new Battlestar Galactica show, Blood and Chrome, which I'm not going to talk about it so it doesn't get canceled, but he recently finished work on it, and so now he's back to blogging like crazy, and some of the stuff he's posting is just really amazing, including an image of various NX NX class starships fighting in the Romulan War. And so it's a bunch of them, you know, shooting phasers at these early Romulan ships. Really dynamic image. I think it's from, it's either a cover from a book or it's an alternate cover that didn't make it in. In addition to that, there's some behind the scenes photographs from Deep Space Nine sets. Apparently he was the actual guy who painted and added all the Bajoran bits to the Bajoran Interceptor bridge. You know, they built the set and then had Doug come in and Bajorify it. And it's really cool seeing the before and after behind the scenes pictures. So if you haven't been to the Drex Files recently, I really recommend checking it out. It's drexfiles.wordpress.com, and it's Drex Files. So really worth a check out. And you might even find some new wallpapers for your computer while you're there.
Oh, it sounds very cool.
Yeah.
And I imagine when you open that site, do you hear, "We are the Bajorans. You will be Bajorified."
Possibly.
What else do we have up here today, Greg, in the news?
We have a story about Star Trek Online, which I'm still waiting for it to go free to play. I believe that's next month. It's coming up quick, but sort of before that, they're going to season 5, which you've been following Star Trek Online a little bit more than me, so you're gonna have to tell me a little bit more about what that means, that season 5 is beginning.
Okay, all right. Well, what it means is that after they were canceled by UPN, they got picked up by another network, and they're continuing the story with season 5, A Call to Arms. No, wait, that was Enterprise. No, this is a case where what they've been doing with Star Trek Online is, of course, you can go in, you know, and you can just play the game, but they have these missions that they're like episodes. They're stories that you can play through, and so they release them in seasons, and I forget exactly how many are in a season or if it's consistent, but I want to say there's maybe like 6 to 8 in a season. And it'll have a story, and they'll follow the storyline, and they will release them not all at once, but, you know, they'll release this one, and then, again, I don't get to play Star Trek Online very much, so I could be wrong on, like, the time frames here, but I want to say that roughly every week, or maybe week and a half or so, they release the next episode in the season. Mm-hmm. And then later on, they tend to go back and they do a replay of the season where they put these back out.
Oh, interesting.
It just gives you that feeling more of you know, being in a Star Trek series, and it gives you,
right.
It allows them to advance their storyline, because Star Trek Online actually has a whole backstory that they wrote for it to bridge the gap between the end of Voyager and what we saw happening in the 24th century and into the beginning of the 25th century, which is when Star Trek Online takes place. And so they want to continue advancing their storyline in addition to your own content that you can create with the Foundry or so forth. So that's what season 5 is about. And it's launched on December 1st, so last Thursday. Mm-hmm. So it's now going.
Very cool, very cool. Are they going to start pulling things out of Manny Kota's magic bag of hindsight?
I think so, probably so.
Are players going to learn that they were Romulans the entire time?
Yeah.
Or half Romulan, I suppose.
Yeah, and we get the storyline, which I think we've talked about on here before, where we find out that Porthos is actually half cat, half dog.
Indeed. No, this does look really interesting. I like the idea of an ongoing storyline. That's one thing that really bugged me about World of Warcraft, is that, you know, you go into the show or into the game and you're doing the same storyline that 10 million people have already done and are doing, you know, right along with you. So this, in theory at least, I haven't played it myself, but in theory, it would give you the sense of a world that's around you and is a real world that's changing and evolving and moving forward and isn't just the same game experience. Because I'm enjoying something like Mass Effect 2 that has a storyline, and obviously it's basically the same game that everyone else plays. But for an MMO, there's this sense of you want it to be different. You want it to be a different sort of game. You don't want it to just feel like a single-player game that you're playing with a bunch of other people.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. And especially with Star Trek, because we all want to see that continuing missions and the continuing evolution of the universe. So that is a great thing that they do here. Now, season 5, besides episodes, well, okay, you mentioned that free-to-play is coming up, and that's coming up on January 17th. And they were also promoting recently a special sale on lifetime subscriptions, which at first seemed kind of odd because you know that it's coming free to play. And, you know, the first reaction is like, oh, well, are they trying to maybe, like, the people who don't know it's going to be free to play, like, let's get our last bit of money from them or something. But that's not the case. As we mentioned before, there's going to be two levels. There's free to play and then there's gold members. And the gold members will pay $14.99 per month to receive additional features, additional slots for items, you know, and access to things. And that's the current bottom line price, I believe, $14.99. And what they're doing with this sale is that it's $100, but I think it's $100 off.
Right, yeah. I'm not sure what the original price was, but yeah, it's $100 off. Sure.
Yeah, I want to say it was $249, but it's $100 off the original price. And what that would do is it's a lifetime subscription, so you would have gold membership forever in that case after it goes free to play. So you would have all the extra perks without having to pay anything additional. So if you play Star Trek Online a lot and you don't already have a lifetime membership and you've been paying month to month, this would be a great thing for you to grab so that you maintain all of those features after the free-to-play. What I did want to throw in here is that in addition to the episodes, season 5 brings a lot of new features that are going to be part of the free-to-play model. And those include the new duty officer system. And that allows you to collect and trade crew members with other captains. And there's something called the Borg Advancement. And these are new missions where you go and you confront the Borg Armada as they're advancing towards the Alpha Quadrant. The Borg are, again, kind of becoming resurgent here, and they're making their way to invade the Alpha Quadrant again.
How many times do we have to defeat the Borg, exactly? And is it like how many licks it takes to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? I mean,
yes,
we defeated them in First Contact. We defeated them in Voyager. We defeated them in a post-Voyager series of novels. We also defeated them in Enterprise. You know, I'm just wondering, you know, how many more times? 20? 50?
It's, well, you hit it on the head. It's how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Roll Tootsie Pop? Exactly. That's what it is. I mean, that's what the whole Borg concept was based on, that old commercial from the 70s. I mean, it's a little known fact about Star Trek, but it's true. I mean, the Borg Queen herself is just a replacement for that owl.
The Borg Queen almost seems like the football that Charlie Brown keeps trying to kick. Charlie Brown being the Federation and Lucy being the Borg, and the football itself being the Borg Queen. I think you can tell where this analogy is going.
Absolutely. And you know, we thought last time, we thought we defeated them.
Yeah.
And the Borg Queen said, you know, funny thing about this letter here, it was never notarized.
Ah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, great. See how much Star Trek has influenced culture in general, and how much general culture has influenced Star Trek. They're so intertwined.
Yeah. Well, you know, Guinan is based on the psychiatry that's in the Peanuts cartoon. It was simply, that was their version of
the psychiatrist
5 cents. Yeah.
Exactly. I understand now, because you never noticed it on the show, but in some clips I've seen from the HD remastered, you can clearly see that sign on the bar in 10 forward that says advice 5 cents. Oh,
exactly.
The things we learn from the remastering of The Next Generation. Anyway, what were we talking about here? Oh, Star Trek Online, right?
Oh, yes.
Another one of our little ready room sidetracks. Klingon updates are coming.
Ooh.
There are a lot of Star Trek Online players who love playing as the Klingons, and so there's some goodies for them in here. There's changes to the skill system, changes to the way you play through episodic content on missions. There's some new non-combat missions that you can play in social zones, which I hope means that you get to invade Facebook and get rid of all of the Farmville ads.
Which I believe that is a reference to Zynga or Zynga or whatever, however you pronounce it, which is that company that keeps making these amazingly addictive games that I don't go anywhere near. Which,
yeah,
that's one thing that's in our news today, is that the executive producer of Star Trek Online, Dan Stahl, has finally returned to Star Trek Online after a brief stint working for Zynga.
That's right. He has come back, finally. So, and I think that's good for Star Trek Online fans. When he left, it's been about a year, I think, and hopefully him coming back is going to bring, you know, he talks about how there are magical things going on at Cryptic. And I'm not sure what, honestly, I don't want to say that. I was going to make a reference to something I forgot to say. He does say that there are some magical things going on at Cryptic, and he's excited to be part of those. And I think he just really loves Star Trek and MMOs. And so having him back, I think, will be a good thing for Star Trek Online.
Yeah, it definitely should. You know, it's always good to see the people with the original vision coming back to it. And hopefully that's his sort of vote of confidence in the future of Star Trek Online.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Greg, last week we had a great time having 5-Year Mission on the show. It was so much fun hearing them play their songs acoustic for us.
Yeah, man. That's got to be like my top five of our podcasts of all time. I just kept going back and listening to it, and I actually had you send me the acoustic versions of the songs so that I could listen to them again. Today, I've actually been trying to figure out some of the songs myself on guitar so I can play them. So if you want to give me a minute,
really?
I'll grab my guitar and I can start Sitting on the Edge of Forever. I've just about got it down. So it's becoming a ritual for me to sing these songs, and 5-Year Mission is just becoming more a part of my life. And we keep getting tweets from people that we're so happy that we had them on the show. People that are finding out about them are becoming more excited about year two coming because they came on our show. So I'm so glad we had them on. That was a really fun time.
Yeah, it was great. And one of my favorite moments was at the end of Arena, where Andy roams in from the hallway and has a very delayed shout of Arena. It's like, supposed to happen right at the end of the song. Right. Get to the end of the song. Where's Andy? Oh, here he comes. Arena.
I don't know. My favorite part might have been Mike dancing in the background. Unfortunately, our listeners weren't treated to the sight of Mike dancing like a crazy person. I forget which song it was, but
I think it was Unlock Time at the beginning.
I think it was.
And yeah, I know. Yeah, I told the guys, it's a good thing you can't see Mike back there behind you. I'm going to have to start over otherwise.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, why don't we preview a couple of more tracks this week real quick here. First one is a song that we actually had them perform for us acoustic earlier in the year, and that's Space Seed. So let's play a clip.
All aboard the Botany Bay, 85 people floating through space, checking the computer reveals that they're Supermen.
Canoonian sing. Anyway, I love this song. I think we've talked about the different styles of five-year mission songs before, and this one is one of the more straightforward, just tell the story of the episode songs. But some of those don't work quite as well for me. This one is perfect for me. I love the take it has on the character. It makes me love Khan even more than I did before.
Yeah, it is a fun take. It's an unexpected take, you know, for an episode where you have this battle of wits between Kirk and Khan, and so it's definitely a fun one. And like you said, a straightforward telling. Why don't we play one more track here today, which is also a fairly straightforward telling of a story, and that's A Taste of Armageddon. Let's play a clip.
You're killing every man, but the buildings, they still
So this one is probably, for me, one of the most straightforward tracks on the whole album, not only in terms of style, but also lyrics. It's a good retelling of the episode and what happens, and you get a little bit of a feeling from both sides of it. What did you think about this one?
What I like, I think this is one of the ones I like the production the most. I just feel like it comes together. I believe this is the one that has like a violin on it, and it just sounds like there's a whole thing going on. It really sounds like, I don't know what their studio setup is. They sort of joked with us about the five-year mission studio, but this one sounded like it was a professional song. I was really impressed by all of the different elements they had in it. It's not an episode I'm familiar with, and the songs I connect with most are the episodes I connected with most. So on that level, I'm like, I don't really know what this is about, but I always enjoy listening to it. I never skip it or anything.
Oh, so you don't remember A Taste of Armageddon, the precursor to War Games, where they fight this war with the neighboring planet by computers for 500 years.
That one, yes. Yeah. I actually do remember that one. I do remember it, but it's not one of the ones I have a connection with from childhood or anything. Like, you know, say Arena or the one with the giant space amoeba.
which you tried to get rid of using Tide, right?
I did. It usually cleans it right up.
Oh, all right. All right. So, well, those are two more tracks from year two, which should be available anytime now. Mike tweeted yesterday, I think it was, that the CDs are back from being pressed. So,
yeah, he said they actually put them in the mail and they should be coming to people's doorsteps Monday or Tuesday.
Oh, great. So actually, if you pre-ordered, you may already have the album in your hand as you're listening to this.
You may. Or you may have given them your previous address and have no idea when it's actually going to reach you. That's my
situation. Hypothetically speaking, of course, right, Greg?
Indeed.
All right. Well, we'll preview two more tracks next week for those who don't have the album yet. And definitely encourage you to head over to 5yearmission.net where you can order the album or check iTunes. It should be up there soon. And I believe it's going to be up in all the other MP3 stores as well, at Amazon and elsewhere. So check wherever fine albums are sold.
Right.
All right. Okay, so one last thing today, Greg. Now's the time on the Ready Room where we play our favorite game, Trek Movie News Rumors.
Rumors, rumors, rumors.
All right. We need some production value on that, I think.
We do. We need something. I don't know.
But, because I have a feeling that this is going to become a regular feature of the show for the next 18 months.
I know. We're getting into that part of, you know, people always ask me, is there enough Star Trek news? And there honestly is, not even looking at the Star Trek 12 news that's coming up, but it seems like there's always something week to week. There's a lot of news this week. The one thing I want to nail in on is finally J.J. Abrams has spoken out about Benicio del Toro's role, and he said, for sure, Benicio is not playing a South Talos police commissioner. It's out. It's not going to happen. Get over it. Move on.
You know, you're right. For me, when I read that, it was like a giant Taurian creature stabbed a spear through my back.
Sort of tossed it on stage through your back.
Just shut down our entire theory that we were so certain about, that Benicio del Toro was going to play that South Talosian cop. But you know what this means, Greg? It means what? That our other theory must be the correct one. That Benicio del Toro is being recast as?
Well, he's being cast as Uhura, of course. And I'm really looking forward to seeing, you know, we talked about the HD remastering and all the colors. I'm, you know, Benicio's Uhura costume in 3D, on film, on the big screen, it's just going to, you know, they're going to have to use a lot of Tide, but it's going to look beautiful and shapely. And, you know, I really show off Benicio's legs a way that no film really has up to this date. You know, 2013 is going to be remembered as when Benicio really started showing off, you know.
Showing leg, right?
Showing leg. You know, it's
And they're going to have, on the bridge of the Enterprise, they're going to have that product placement for Tide with Color Guard.
Captain, for sure. We don't have enough Tide to get through the... Anyway, I actually don't know if that was Chekhov or Scotty. I'm literally not sure if I was doing Chekhov or Scotty right now. Please, that should be our next Trek FM poll.
Okay, that's our poll. Who was Greg imitating on the last Ready Room? All right. So anyway. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit more about Benicio del Toro real quick. So the rumors. So first off, the Latino Review claimed on December 2nd that they had the scoop on del Toro and that he would be playing Khan, that a source had told them that they knew it was Khan. And they wrote this long post, and at the end of the post, they write, but again, Benicio, period, Khan, period, 2013, period, expect rebuttals and denials. Period. And then almost the same day, HitFlix claimed that they were told by JJ flat out, very simply, two very direct words, not true.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
well, as someone who's been following movie rumors for going on 12, 15 years, I trust HitFlix a lot more than I do Latino Review, just as far as their track record. Drew McQueenie at HitFlix really has fantastic sources. And if he says he talked to J.J. Abrams and got a denial, that's what I'm going to believe, honestly.
All right. As we've talked on here many times before, I really don't think it's Khan. Now, one thing I don't think we've really talked about on here, or at least not much, and I was talking to Isaac, who does all the illustration for Trek FM, and he was pointing out that Benicio del Toro would be perfect to play either Kor or Koloth if they went original series Klingons. For me, I don't know. That sounds quite possible. What do you think about that?
Yeah, as you mentioned this, I'm thinking that we really haven't seen much Klingon in the rebooted Abramsverse, and I'd love to see what they'd look like. You know, I'm just imagining a Klingon ship that's, you know, being done in the new style, and the makeup and the set direction, the pyrotechnics. And I think it could be actually really phenomenal, now that I think about it, really getting into, you know, what the Klingons are like in this role. You know, can Abrams set them up as the villain that TOS sort of tried to make them? But except in the original series films, and even not so much there, the Klingons I don't feel like they ever reached their potential as villains. Like, they never were a huge threat. So if Abrams could give us, like, an actual Earth-Kronos war in the Abramsverse, that could be really exciting.
Yeah. I would be interested to see a story about, say, Kirk and Kor, that's not a retelling of an original story, but we kind of find out more about Kirk and Kor. Because, you know, the thing about the Klingons is that everyone thinks of the Klingons as like the big villain on the original series, but as you know, they really don't appear on the original series very often. There are only a few true Klingon episodes, and then they kind of show up here and there in a couple, but it was really the movies where the Klingons became more of the villain. So
yeah,
it would be interesting to see them kind of flesh that out in the new timeline.
Yeah, I mean, there is a rumored title for Star Trek 12, The Great Tribble Hunt.
Oh, that would be cool. It would be like a comedy. You'd love it. It'd be like Star Trek 4. It'd be like this rebooted franchise's comedy. The Great Tribble Hunt. But even though you don't like Star Trek 4, you would love this one because it would heavily feature Glommers.
It would, yes. I mean, imagine, you know, we've seen Glommer the way it was imagined by the animated series, but think of the animated Enterprise and then the Abramsverse Enterprise. Now imagine the animated Glommer and the Abramsverse Glommer in 3D.
Oh, somehow I'm picturing that it would have sharp teeth and like a long pointed tongue and hiss a lot. And when it stares at you, lens flares fly everywhere.
That's the sound effect of lens flares.
Great. Now we just need that in 7.1 and it'll all come to life for us. Okay, Greg, one more rumor on the movie before we wrap up news here today. And this is that apparently someone has been cast in another role for the movie. And this is the British actress Alice Eve.
Yes, Alice Eve, who I have apparently seen in a bunch of things, including Sex and the City. Trying to think of now the other things I've seen her in because she was on Entourage. But I can't tell you who she is. She's very pretty. I'm sure she's extremely talented. I mean, she's a blonde. Can you think of a role? I mean, Daner, perhaps, or Yeoman no. Rand?
Well, yeah, that's one I thought about was Rand. I don't know. I don't know who to think of who she would be. I've seen some people on Twitter or on a website. I forget now where I read it. Someone was suggesting that maybe she's going to play T'Pring, but of course T'Pring is not blind, but of course maybe T'Pring is blind, and maybe in this new universe, like when the Vulcans, they have to find a new homeworld, maybe they land on a planet where something in the atmosphere causes everyone to become blind. I don't know.
Possible. So, maybe. That sounds like a season one or season two Next Gen episode where they... Everyone's hair turns blonde and Pulaski doesn't know what to do.
No, she doesn't know what to do. It's the finale to season two, Shades of Blonde. And she straps everybody down to tables and she makes them relive all of their memories of the past two seasons to make their hair turn black again.
Right. Well, if they remember the experiences and remember the color of hair they had during those experiences, their hair will just come back. She's a genius, Chris. I don't know why you don't like her.
She's
a genius.
I guess I have trouble. Maybe I'm jealous of her genius. Maybe that's what it is.
It's very possible.
Okay. Well, so anyway, about Alice Eve here, they're saying that she is going to play a brand new character to the franchise. So that suggests to me that it will be someone that we have never seen before, right? But then at the same time, they say that she will be playing a character that Trekkies will be familiar with. So what does that mean? You'll be familiar with this character, but she's brand new to the franchise. I mean, what, is she going to play Six from Battlestar Galactica? I don't know. You know, it's a character that we're familiar with because a lot of Trekkies watch Battlestar Galactica, but yet she was never in this franchise before. I don't know. What is it going to be?
Well, you know that Sarek did remarry several times after Amanda. So I'm thinking this is just, you know, one of Spock's many stepmommies.
Okay, maybe. I don't know what to think. Oh, gosh. So We'll find out. Apparently, Eve beat out Teresa Palmer from IOM number 4, which makes me think if they were going to have a Borg storyline, she would have been perfect for that. And Hayley Atwell from Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yeah, you know, I liked Hayley Atwell. I'm wondering, it appears they're going for a British actress for whatever role this is. So that makes me think it's not going to be a crew member, although you never know.
You know, I'm just thinking here real quick. We have Scotty. We have O'Brien. I'm thinking that maybe they're recasting the role of Scotty. Because, but look at it this way, Greg. Okay, we already know that they're replacing Zoe Saldana in the role of Uhura with Benicio del Toro. Yeah. And so they need to have, you know, a beautiful woman on the crew again. So they're going to get rid of Simon Pegg. They're going to replace Scotty with Alice Eve.
You know, that's entirely possible. You know, but what I was thinking was, you know, you had Miles O'Brien, so we had the Irish. We had Scotty, who's obviously Scottish. What we haven't had is a real London chav in Starfleet. Yeah, you know, Captain, why are we going out here, eh? You know, why don't we just go down to the pub, eh? Throw back some pints. What are we doing out here, man? Eh? Eh?
Okay, Greg, this reminds me, though. You promised us earlier in the news segment that you were going to do your imitation of Picard playing Kirk. Now, do you have that ready yet?
Get off the bridge, Wesley. That's basically all I got.
Is that it? We waited like half an hour for that.
I'm sorry. I let you guys down. It's a hard one. Get your mind around that, guys. So this week, please send us in your rendition of Patrick Stewart as William Shatner as Kirk. And we'll play your... Obviously, whatever you have is better than what I can do. So we'll play those next week on the show.
Okay. Sounds great. All right. Well, Greg, why don't we wrap up news for this week? And we'll head off into the feature where we're going to be talking about the Galileo 7. Well, Vulcan logic is great for some things, but I've always personally kind of questioned whether it's good for command. You never see too many starships with Vulcan captains or full Vulcan crews. And in the original series, Spock's Vulcan logic often put him at odds with the crew. Now, in the Galileo 7, we get to see Spock's command skills put to the test. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And of course, I have Greg with me. And we're also joined today by Michael Fisher, who is now writing for Trek FM. And Michael, how are you today?
Doing great, guys. Thank you for having me on. I've been looking forward to this for a while. So thank you for having me.
Our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
We're glad you're here. Now, Michael, before we start talking about the Galileo 7, we should tell people that... you are a voice actor, and you also do stage acting, and therefore, Greg and I have a question for you before we jump into the episode here.
Now, excellent, okay.
We've been trying to, you know, put this rumor to rest, and is there any truth to the rumor that's been reported that J.J. Abrams wants you as Zachary Quinto's hug double for the next Star Trek movie?
His hug double.
Yes.
Yeah. The piece of paper I signed indicated I can't speak about anything related to hug doubling. So I said, right. No.
so you're going to deny that?
I'm going to go ahead and deny that.
All right. Well, you can deny it, but we know that it's probably true. And so that leads me to the second question I have to ask you. Are you disappointed that you're not going to be working with Zoe Saldana now that the role of Uhura has been recast with Benicio del Toro?
I am actually completely relieved about that. Thank you.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to know. So we can stop, you know, Greg and I can stop iMessaging and debating right. about whether this really is true or not. So,
yeah, I hope right. you terminate all those Twitter accounts you founded in those names. Benicio.
All right. Yeah. We'll get rid of the Twitter accounts, but not the Tumblr.
Thank you. Okay, it's a deal.
I was thinking Michael might be a little more qualified to do Patrick Stewart as William Shatner as Captain Kirk.
Oh, dear God.
Oh, yes.
So we'll come back to that again. If you could work on that for next week.
Yeah,
we're looking for the best.
Sure, yeah. I'll go rehearse nervously stammering for another few minutes.
Thank you.
Perfect. Okay, guys. Well, let's talk about... We haven't talked about the original series on here in quite a while now, and we're going to go back and talk about the first season episode, the Galileo 7, today. And this is an interesting episode because, you know, we have talked on here before about how there are a lot of really great stories in the original series. You know, there are a lot of good, sometimes it's heavy-handed, but there are a lot of good messages. A lot of good writers worked on that show. And at the same time, sometimes that gets lost in all the great cheesiness that is the original series. And
wonderful cheesiness.
You know, this episode really kind of rolls up a lot of what's great about the original series and a lot of what's bad about the original series into one 50-minute story. Greg, you rewatched Galileo 7 yesterday, I think. What were your thoughts watching this again?
Yeah. So, you know, we had talked previously about Galileo 7, you know, just vamping on the show about it, and I haven't actually gone back and watched it in a while. It's one of the episodes I remembered it happened, but it wasn't one that I had gone back and watched recently. So right off the bat, the one thing I noticed was the new effects that they added. I guess at this point, it was like 4 or 5 years ago when they redid these effects. And it's really impressive, especially the quasar or pulsar or whatever that they're going to investigate. It looks astonishing. All the shots of the Enterprise in front of it and the ship and the new planet they've made looks fantastic.
It really
does. And then that... right next to the scenes of them on the planet where it's obviously in a studio and there's styrofoam rocks. And we keep talking about, we should probably mention this on the show itself, the spears that I believe they hired a couple interns to sort of chuck spears onto the set from right off stage.
Right,
it doesn't look like they were thrown by actual
creatures. What we call the lobbing chain, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right,
yes,
the lobbing
exactly.
chain. Yeah, having been blessed enough to be hired as an intern and as an extra and as, you know, these little bit parts many, many, many times, I have to tell you that spear chucking is a unique, an art that you need to practice. And yeah, I think some of these guys that they got to throw these spears were just, you know, phoning it in a little bit. They were on a coffee break.
I didn't buy that those spears were being chucked by someone who really wanted Spock dead.
No, it was like an underhand lob from off the camera. Like,
I know, it's like,
in a row.
Why don't you see if you can like maybe like give him a little headache by hitting his head with the middle of the spear, just kind of bounce it off of him a little bit if you can. So,
right.
It's like,
and even if it hit them, like, I mean, the spear is like this carved stone tip of the spear is... I mean, it looks more paper mache than the rocks, even. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Well, okay. So this reminds me of there's a next gen episode. Yes. Gonna have to remind me what it's called, but it's the one where Picard is trying to communicate with
Darmok.
The guy, and he only could communicate in metaphors.
Oh,
Darmok.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great episode.
So there's a quote from I'm gonna get this wrong, but I believe it's Ricky Gervais. It's somebody famous who said he heard the concept of the episode. And he never watched the actual episode because the concept was so good, he knew the episode was just going to let him down. And in the case of Darmok, I don't know. He should probably just go ahead and watch
it. Yeah, that's a good one.
But this is an episode where I feel like the concept was let down by the execution. I definitely want to talk mostly today about the concept of the episode because the episode itself lost something.
So you think the concept of lobbing giant spears was great, but the interns just didn't quite pull it off, is what
just
you're saying.
Didn't
right?
quite deliver.
Well, you know, imagine that on the page where there's spears whizzing by their heads, and these spears are gigantic, and and someone's been impaled by them, and there's this danger, and there's these monsters, and they're really terrified. And but Spock, and then, Spock has no emotion, and Spock isn't terrified. That's tension. That's something you have something
so
there.
That looks good on paper, and instead, what you got is it's kind of like you're at the Zulu parade at Mardi Gras, right?
Right.
Where they're throwing spears off the float, and the spears have little soft rubber tips, and
right. Hollow stalks, and
Okay.
Right.
Well, we'll talk about that, of course. Yeah, the execution. So this episode, it is a very important episode, though, as hilarious as some of it is. Look, I was watching it, too, yesterday. I watched the original version, and then right after I watched the remastered version so that I could kind of see what they did with the effects. And, you know, and there's so much great character development in here for Spock. It's a very important episode for Spock. And then at the same time, I start cracking up laughing. Like all these just, I was getting really uncomfortable with some of the, just the constant close-up face shots of galactic walking timepiece Ferris.
The time is now 5:46 a.m.
It's like Siri, right?
You know, Siri shows up and says, number one, you have 6 minutes until you have to leave for New Paris.
Right. It's like Kirk. It's like, Siri, how long do I have left before I have to abandon the search? And it goes, bing.
Right.
You have 24 hours left. Would you like me to set an alarm for you?
And he's like, and you know, he's just there to remind Kirk, and actually, no, he's just there to remind the viewer that we're running out of time. Like, he's this kind of tension amping device who has positively no feelings for the stranded people. Like, at no point was he ever human. He was more Vulcan than Spock was, you know, and he's not.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that should have been a Vulcan, you know, somebody from the Federation that's a Vulcan. It's sort of going back to Enterprise, where there's this guy who doesn't understand why humans are worried about their stranded crew members.
Right.
But instead we get this guy who just apparently is such a bureaucrat and he doesn't understand the situation.
No, it should have been played by the clock from Beauty and the Beast. That actually looks like a giant clock.
Just a clock face with a mustache.
Yeah, yes, that would be great.
Well, I mean, according to Memory Alpha, the actor himself was a little annoyed with William Shatner because he took so much screen time and hogged the attention. I think his problem should have been with the script. I mean, I don't know what he was supposed to do. The turbolift doors open. He tells Kirk what time it is. He has these weird little, weird like cape vest thing. I don't even know.
He's got like a mini cape on each shoulder.
Right. So he turns around and the mini cape sort of swishes. And then the turbolift doors close, and that's scene.
Right.
There's not much as an actor, Michael. What is your motivation?
Yeah, I mean,
in swishing your sort of cape.
You know,
thing.
None of that stuff shows up on the page. Like, you look at the page, and it's like, exactly what you just said. Turbolift doors open. Here's your line. Turbolift doors close. And then the director spends 85 minutes, and he's like, you really got to turn on that. And we got to see that costume just fly.
Yeah.
Scott,
I need
turn
more swish.
Yeah,
right.
Oh man. But they did do a good job of, you know, some variety with Ferris. You know, like sometimes he comes in and he gives the time and then he leaves. Sometimes he comes in and he gives the time and then he goes kind of back behind Kirk's chair and he just stands there for a long time and kind of like gives Kirk this look like, we got to go. And then sometimes he comes in and he gives the time and then he goes and he sits on Uhura's control panel.
Oh, yes. He does the casual lean.
I always want Uhura to say, would you get off of my panel?
Right. That's true.
Yeah. Too bad Chekhov wasn't there, and he would have gone up and, you know, sort of mussed Chekhov's hair.
That'd be great.
Gotten him on a little playful headlock.
Yeah. All right. So that's Galak. Besides the fact that he's a walking timepiece, at the beginning of the episode, Kirk says, on board is Galactic High Commissioner Ferris. It's like such a letdown. Like, Galactic, it's like this job is like second to God or something. It's like he's in charge of the whole galaxy. And it's like, Galactic High Commissioner Ferris. Ferris? That was my reaction every time. Like, Ferris?
Right. Well, okay. So on a story level, obviously they were trying to give ostensibly, Kirk is the star of the show. William Shatner is the star. You have to give him some sort of motivation, give him some sort of conflict. Yeah. But I feel like they didn't do anything with it because they just kept repeating the same scene. You know, Kirk's best friend and a lot of his crew members that he cares a lot about are on the planet, and they never deal with it. You know, for once, I missed Deanna Troi, because Kirk had no one that he could go to and talk about. You know, he couldn't go into his ready room and discuss how much he missed Spock and how much this was tearing him up inside, that he had to leave and he wanted to stay. That never actually came out. It was something you just sort of had to assume was happening.
No, that's true. And also, once the time limit came, and then, you know, Ferris comes on the bridge and he says, oh, your time's up, Kirk. And Kirk's like, all right, fine. Kirk kind of mollifies him, gets him out of there. And then we never see him again. Like, that's the last time we see him.
Yeah,
and then Kirk sets this course for wherever he's supposed to be going, to the medication planet at space normal speed.
Space normal speed.
Right.
And then everyone gives him the warp 8 look.
And then there's that dramatic zoom out.
It's like, what, did you say warp 8? No, this is TOS. Space normal speed.
Right, space normal speed. We're going to do sublight. And you'd think Ferris would be, I mean, why isn't he on the bridge in the first place? Because now officially he's in command of the mission or whatever. But he's not sitting by a window watching the stars go by, wondering why they're not going faster. Like, why doesn't he ever show up again? All of a sudden he's busy now. It's like, oh, good.
There's a deleted scene where he's looking out a window and realizing they're not at warp, and he just starts tapping his foot just irritatedly.
And crossing his fingers, shaking his head. Just, that Kirk.
He's following the letter, but not the spirit of my order.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, why don't we go down to the planet for a little bit? So first of all, the shuttle takes off, and they head into the Murasaki 312, which, as we were talking about before the show, is green on the TV series, even though Murasaki means purple in Japanese. And then in the comic book, it's red. So,
They just can't get
that color on there. But they get sucked in. They crash on the planet, and where the important stuff comes in here, of course, is that this is the first time that we get to see Spock in a command role, and this is the interesting part for Spock's character development, because we've seen him kind of maybe the crew is it he's always at odds with the crew because of his logic versus the emotion, and how's that going to play out in a command situation where here, you know, he's going to have to possibly make the decision to leave people behind?
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic that I hadn't really thought of before really diving into this episode to talk about it, because you think of Next Gen and Riker could have stepped into command at any moment.
Oh, yeah.
He was a born leader. But Spock is very much more a good executive officer. He's good at giving advice to the captain and then letting the captain actually make the tough choices.
And not only that, yeah, I think like the role of XO in the original series was, you know, it's very much secondary to Spock's role as science officer. I feel like he was the executive officer just by virtue of the fact that that happened to come with the position. But really what he wanted to do and what he ended up, you know, doing most of the time was science-y, being in charge of science-y stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. And here, like I said in the opening, you know, we didn't really see, obviously at this point in TOS we didn't see, but even through all of the Star Trek franchise, we've rarely seen Vulcan captains on Starfleet vessels. We've seen, I think on DS9, we've seen it a couple times. Actually, Sisko's ship,
yeah.
The captain was a Vulcan. But you haven't seen that very much, because it always seems like the logic would impede their ability to make command decisions, because you really have to use a lot of intuition and you have to make a lot of quick decisions that seem irrational at the time.
Right. Well, it feels to me like the Federation is very human-centric, especially as far as captains go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they talk about how the CEOs in America are all older white men, probably balding. And I feel like that's the same thing is exactly true of Starfleet captains. You know, they barely let a woman in charge. But they're never going to put a Klingon in charge of a Federation starship. And even if they join the Federation, it's weird how unthinkable it is. You never really see them, that the way the Federation operates is as a human.
Yeah.
You know, human emotions drive the Federation and drive the choices that that the captain makes every time.
That's directly commented on in Star Trek VI, too, in that horribly awkward dinner scene where, the Chancellor's daughter is like, the Federation is nothing more than a Homo sapiens only club. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, well, yeah, it's kind of true, because right before that, Chekhov's like, oh, everyone has unalienable human rights. And it's like, come on, man. You can't. Come on. You're at a table with 10 Klingons,
exactly.
So don't say that.
Right. You have to say everyone has inalienable humanoid rights, right?
Right,
and then the Tholians get really pissed off.
Right.
And,
yeah. You just can't win.
Right.
That's right. But yeah, it's true. And but you do have the situation here with Spock being the XO, essentially, that he could, if something happens to Kirk, suddenly have to jump into command.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like early on in the mission, Spock didn't have to do anything too special. You know, he was there because, as you say, he's the science officer. And it's not until they do run into trouble that he has to take over and start making choices. I was just watching, what was the episode? I believe it's Pen Pals, where Wesley has to take command. And it's kind of odd that Wesley has the same issue that Spock does with people not wanting to follow his orders. I don't know. Did you guys expect Spock to be a little bit more successful of a leader than he turns out to be?
I did, just speaking for myself. But I, it's because I felt that his crew really failed him. Mm-hmm. In this particular episode, I don't think anybody on that shuttlecraft is doing him any favors. I mean, obviously you have McCoy there, who's always interested in getting under Spock's skin about something or other, but you have this crew who's right. Kind of just openly belligerent, and and it really punches a lot of holes in this kind of Starfleet as Space Navy thing that I think maybe the original series is going for. You got what was his name, Boma, just riding Spock and everything. Isn't that what you mean, mm-hmm. Mr. Spock? I'm so tired of this machine, you know. And I mean, they're all just complaining. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Spock tells them to, like, fire over the creature's heads. And they're like, no, you know, we'd really rather just shoot them, you know.
Right.
Because apparently we're allowed to just kill people.
Right. And, like, they're working on, I think, inputting the phasers or something. We'll get to it later. But they're working on something really important. And Boma comes in. He's like, I'm ready to bury the other guy now. And then they're like, well, we're working on getting the shuttle off the ground. And then everybody turns on Spock. Like, everyone's, oh, how can you be so heartless? We're going to bury this guy. Screw this.
I know.
everyone note except Scotty, who stays hard at work through the entire
Scotty
scene.
He does not
care about burying nobody.
Right.
He's the best part of this episode. He's the best part of that crew. Scotty's like, just get your crap out of my head. I have to fix this.
Yeah. Although Scotty's best move in here is when he jiggles the battery to electrify the hull of the shuttle, and he puts that big mitt on, like you're cooking steaks on the grill.
Yes.
And stands off to the side and rocks that thing. I mean,
I feel like when it first aired, that sequence of the show had a little parental warning, you know. Scotty is a trained professional. Yeah.
Do not try this at home. That's right.
You gotta
wonder. And then he has to put that big panel back on afterwards.
Many shots in this episode go long. Like, if you really watch this episode a couple times, like, you can see, like, James Doohan, after 3 seconds of trying to put that panel on, is done. He's just sitting there, not doing anything more, waiting for the director to say cut. And they're just not. They're just going to hold that shot, man. I don't know what was up.
That happened on where they're firing the phasers over the creature's heads, too. It's like a good 30 seconds of shooting his phaser at a 45-degree angle.
That goes on way too long. Spock's like, okay, fire on my command. Wait, fire! Wait for it.
Well, Spock has to walk back and climb up the cliff a little
bit. Wait for it. Ceasefire! That'll show them. They won't mess with us anymore. They now know that we are super powerful. Right.
Right. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, so what we were saying, I guess we're on another one of our ready room sidetracks here, was that everyone is writing, Michael, like you said, everyone's like really writing Spock here. And I mean, I see that as a couple of reasons for that. We had this buildup where, you know, the crew kind of doesn't maybe trust Spock because he's too mechanical, too logical. You see that like in Balance of Terror. Who was the officer on the bridge in Balance of Terror who just...
Oh, is he Styles or something?
Yeah, he's just like waiting to turn on Spock. It's like you can tell that there's this animosity toward Spock from a lot of the crew members. And then here they get in a tight situation. Right. And then that just kind of really boils over. Like they don't trust Spock to get them out of the situation.
Right. Well, I think at the same time, it's not only them. It's that Spock himself is really unsure of himself. There's a scene I remember really in particular where Nimoy was acting his heart out because Spock is coming to the realization that logic won't solve all of his problems. Oh, yeah. And he's sort of monologuing, you know, I followed all the correct, but the choices, it didn't. People are dying, and it turns out that it didn't. And, you know, I wouldn't follow that guy, you know, into a brightly lit room.
It's so true.
Personally.
Well, you know, that scene, that particular scene right there, I was watching this yesterday, and that moment when Spock is like, I followed all the logical procedures, and yet crewmen are dead, and I've only fostered animosity. And he's like, it's like you see the gears running in his brain. For me, it was exactly. It was, I was watching Big Bang Theory recently, and Sheldon is trying to figure out what he did wrong that got Penny upset at Leonard. And Wallowitz is sitting on the sofa, and Raj wants to tell him, and Wallowitz says, no, let's just wait. Let's just see if he can figure it out. This was the exact scene between McCoy looking at Spock here. It was exactly the same scene.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, so...
he's a difficult guy to follow. Yeah, so I agree completely.
He's a difficult guy to follow. So it's not just that these people are being, you know, doing insubordinate things. So I do hope he learned his lesson by the end. And I guess he does end up doing something. I guess he doesn't tell them and then he ignites the matter stream or whatever. Yeah. So good character development. And so that's you know, one of those on paper. Look at that. We took Spock from here to there. So if you don't look too closely at exactly how it happened on the show, we did really move Spock forward as a character.
Completely. Yeah. And the only irrational, illogical thing he does all day is what saves them.
Right. Exactly.
Right. And he makes that...
Which is
that,
pretty cool.
That decision, a split-second decision, like to eject the fuel and ignite it. And that's what ends up saving them. And but then... He tries to deny that that was an irrational move or an act of desperation or anything that was not born of logic.
Right. And then...
Well, on some level, it was an extremely logical act. I mean, they knew that the Enterprise was going to be leaving and there wasn't much hope. They were going to be going back in the atmosphere anyway. What were a few more seconds of orbit really going to do for them?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, they try to characterize it as an act of desperation, which of course it was, but it was also, I mean, Spock has a point. He said, what did he say? It's a logical decision logically arrived at. It's like, well, it's true. Yeah, you had like 15 seconds left or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I did want to mention Tarian was the name of the alien that they were against.
Yeah.
Apparently, they were too scary for 1960s audiences and the kids who'd be watching the show because at every moment it feels like what's being in front of me is being censored, like something's being cut or there's some optical effect on the lens something or another. And we're just not being allowed to see these things.
In the original, in the unretouched one, I thought something was wrong with the DVD because there's one point at which the two guys jump down from high ground to low ground and what is it, Latimer who's been killed first?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he's got that spear sticking up out of his back. And I guess in the 60s, they were worried about the censorship. So they pasted in this bizarre optical effect of heavy fog over the bottom half of the screen.
It looks terrible.
Atrocious.
It is. It's like you can see that there's a little bit of like a dry ice smoke or something going. But then the bottom quarter of the screen is like this weird blue smear that's obviously just laid over. It doesn't even look like fog or ground or anything. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and then Spock pulls the spear out, and it's like covered in blood.
The reddest, bright red, non-blood ever.
Right. Well, sure. But I feel like when they shot this episode, they were trying to make it scary. But then in editing, someone told them, you really have to make it less scary. And
sure.
But then there's a scene like when, I forget, the red shirt who gets eaten, I suppose, by the Tarian. And talk about scenes that go on too long. He sits there cowering in fear for about 5 minutes while Frankenstein sort of shambles over towards him.
That's when Gaetano gets killed, right? Because
that's Gaetano,
And right. Spock's like, okay, Boma, let's go back to the shuttle. Gaetano, you stay here and guard this area. And Gaetano's like, oh, crap. I'm a goner, you know?
And then for the second
you guys
time...
You realize I'm going to die, right?
And for the second time, Boma, in the episode, inside 5 minutes, like, Spock gives the order, Gaetano's like, all right. And Boma looks at him like, man, you got a raw deal. I'm so, you know, he gives him a little shoulder pat.
No, he pats him on the shoulder. He's like, man, I'm sorry.
And this was early enough in the series to where I think the majority of dying extras were actually wearing command level stuff or something. So they're not true red shirts, but they are the, you know, it's the beginning of this expendable crewman thing.
They're not wearing red shirts in this episode. Although in the Star Trek ongoing comic, a lot of them are wearing red when they go down.
They retconned that.
Planet in here. But yeah, so I guess with Spock's character development here though, this is the point at which we see him kind of go from this purely mechanical, logical Vulcan to starting to at least realize that there's more than just logic. And then he evolves and he evolves. And for me, this all culminates in Star Trek VI. There's the scene in his quarters with Valeris where he says that logic is the beginning of wisdom, not the end. It's like he finally made that entire journey and he comes to the point where he's now someone who you would be very comfortable with him as the captain of your ship, I think, in the Undiscovered Country.
I thought you were going to say Star Trek IV, where Spock does nothing logical the entire movie.
I'd follow that guy anywhere.
Hey, he ripped that bit off of his bathrobe and wrapped it around his ears so people wouldn't know he was Vulcan. That's logical. I mean...
How about he stays on the ship because he's a Vulcan?
Oh no, he may be a half-wit, but he's still so indispensable. Who else would have dived into that whale tank and mind melded?
but no, certainly Captain Spock is somebody that I deeply respect and admire. And you know, we see him in the new Abrams movie. You know, say what you will about that movie, we see the Spock that is born out of this, where he does things that are not always perfectly logical. He comes to conclusions and he makes decisions based on what makes sense, and especially based on his friendships.
Right, you're talking about...
And it's really great to see that.
You're talking about Spock Prime, right, in the...
Spock
in the,
Prime,
in the
indeed. Nimoy.
Yeah, I think he kind of came off better in the JJ movie in that respect than he did on The Next Generation, even. I always felt like he was... Mm-hmm. duped too easily by Romulans in The Next Generation. That wasn't really Spock.
Yeah, like, that's true.
Especially when it's 100 years after the original series and we saw what he was like in The Undiscovered Country. I think that he would have been even wiser at that point than what we saw. And we do see that in the JJ portrayal, the little bit of what we get to see him in that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Greg, you wanted to also talk a little bit about the overall production of this episode.
Right. Let's see. There were some things that were good, but some things I just want to mention I liked. The Galileo 7 shuttlecraft that they built was actually a really cool set. And in a lot of ways, this reminded me of one of my favorite episodes of Enterprise, Shuttlepod 1.
Oh, that's a good one.
Where you have this small set and people are trying to deal with, you know, not knowing if they're going to survive. And so as far as that goes, I really loved it. Obviously, you're on the terrible set with the lighted backdrop, and there's all that problem. But the actual set itself actually really works for me. The way they shake the camera when it's being hit by the rock. I finally felt a sense of dread, I think, for the first time.
Yeah, and the full-size shuttlecraft, and I did not remember this until earlier today. I was watching some old... you know, late 90s sci-fi channel, you know, commercials, basically, or episode lead-ins mm-hmm. that had been filmed and with Leonard Nimoy. And he reminded me of the fact that this shuttle was designed as a much more rounded, much more aerodynamic, if you will, craft. But the people that provided the money to build the full-size shuttle were AMT, the model kit maker, and they were like, we got money, but we don't have that much money, so we're going to make it like this instead. And in return, you know, because they ponied up that money, they got the rights to do the first model kit of the shuttle Galileo.
Oh, yes, interesting.
Yeah, which was awesome for me as a former kit builder to hear about the origins of that.
Oh,
yeah,
very cool.
Very interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, so the interior set, I was thinking that it's awfully... the design really? Aesthetic of Starfleet has changed quite a lot over the years because it's very bare bones, very utilitarian mm-hmm. inside, or very, very simple. But on the outside, it looks like it's like an RV parked on the planet. And it has like that, it has that little thing in the back where you, like if you have a pop-up camper and you have to put that thing in the back to kind of make sure it's very stable when you're inside it. It has that little leg on the back to prop up the shuttle. I thought was very interesting.
That hydraulic rod attached to the foot. Yeah.
One thing I really loved was the door that we see open several times, and it's in three parts, and sort of it opens then plops down. And one thing I realized is it doesn't close. They didn't have any method of closing it. I think one time someone actually lifts the bottom bit up so that it closes.
Yeah,
it only opens.
Yeah, it's a weird door, and you know, you can, when it's open, you can see through the side. You can kind of almost see the plywood grain in it at points.
Yeah, definitely.
But go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm sorry. The operation of the shuttlecraft is just hilarious. I mean, at one point early on, I think Spock gives a helm command, and the guy in the pilot seat has to turn around and reach back with his arm and flip a switch on the wall to stop the thing. It's like, what a bizarre choice of instrumentation, Starfleet builders. Okay, whatever.
Well, it is important that I heard this. They were talking about, I believe the film was Pitch Black, but it really works for sci-fi when you show people having to really move around and do stuff to make the ship move around. If they're just sort of tapping buttons on a panel, it's extremely undynamic.
That's true.
For the audience.
That's why you sort of see Chewie and Han reaching all over the cockpit, trying to flip as many switches as possible.
It's funny.
Right.
So. I understand why the director would be like, don't just tap a button, sort of reach behind you.
Look at all those buttons behind you could be pressing. You got to press all those.
That's why, like, on the warp core, there would not be a button, you know, to, like, eject the warp core near the warp core. It's on the other side of engineering, so they have to run across
exactly
so they can hit it just in time. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Let's see. I did want to mention I believe her name is Yeoman Mears, mm-hmm. who... was going to be Janice Rand, but she had been written out of the show at this point. So we simply had some random... I don't think she does anything in the episode.
Why is she on the mission?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Why do you need to take a yeoman on a mission with you to investigate a quasar-like formation? But yeah.
This is the first time I remember an away team being brought coffee.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You know, it's funny, you know, my son was watching this. My son hasn't watched very much Star Trek at this point, and he was watching this with me yesterday, and there's the scene on the bridge where the yeoman comes in and gives Kirk and Galactic Walking Timepiece some paper, like little Dixie cups. I bet they were Dixie cups, actually.
They probably were.
And my son says, is that tea, or what are they drinking there? You know, it's like, this is what he sees from it. But it's kind of funny that, there's this crisis going on, and here comes the yeoman with a tray full of Dixie cups with like coffee or tea in it. And then here on the shuttle again, they're like, you know, I know that we're being attacked by these gigantic creatures, but it's tea time. And
I know Gene Roddenberry wasn't perfect, but I imagine he must've been frustrated with having to put sort of eye candy on this away mission. You know, it almost feels like she should be calling them for tea or something. And it goes against, especially you look at Enterprise and you look at the way that women are treated in the Federation treated on Starfleet vessels at that point. And now 100 years later, and they're just They're there to bring tea and crumpets. Is that really?
Right. Yeah, well, I feel like maybe it, like as a yeoman, maybe she had some administrative duties that we never got to see. Like if the science mission had actually proceeded according to plan, maybe she'd, you know, she's the one on the iPad in the back taking notes and dictating, you know, reports and things of that sort. It's like, man, right. It's got to have someone to write down this quantum flux reading or something like, you know what
well,
I mean?
Maybe. I'm sure they didn't just bring her along so that she could serve them drinks.
She could bring them coffee.
She's not like a space stewardess or something like that. But right. But I also think it was, you know, for whatever reason, they felt that they had to have this additional female character who was Yeoman Rand. And then, like you said, Yeoman Rand, for a lot of reasons that we won't go into here, got written off the show. And this is actually the first production episode where she was written off the show. And the script actually was for Yeoman Rand. And there was a note in the script that was put in saying that all of Rand's lines are changed to Yeoman Mears. And so there she is. It could have been that because of Rand's position on the show up to that point, having Rand go with them made more sense. But since Rand was then written out, all that character was still there, and rather than remove the character and it become the Galileo Six, they or replace it with somebody else, like Sulu. I don't know. They you know, because Sulu right. wouldn't look as good in the red dress as Phyllis Douglas did as Yeoman Mears, so they have to do that. But she did a few things. I mean, like when they get ready to take off, she like leaps forward out of her chair and lands in the middle of the shuttle and says, "It's moving."
About to mention,
like, well, it's obviously moving. You just got thrown out of your seat, right?
And then she sits there until they go to commercial break.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't.
Yeah, she doesn't
stand
get up.
Or
she's in a strange yoga position. Yeah.
And I also found it odd that when they crash, Dr. McCoy's asking everyone, you know, how are they? And she's like laughing her ass off and going, yeah, I got like a bump in the head or something. It's like hilarious.
Yeah, I know.
And McCoy's like, save it. You're going to need that at the end of the episode when we make fun of Spock on the bridge.
Oh, God. is it time to talk about
okay,
that
why
scene?
Don't we?
Is
sure.
it time to talk about
why
Dakota?
Not? You know, I mean, we're so focused in our discussion here, but I guess, I guess we can jump to the end of the episode and talk about that now.
So Spock has come a long way. You know, he was this deeply logical beast, and he didn't know how to do command properly. And now he's come through this journey, this hero's journey, and now he understands that he has to balance both emotion and logic in order to lead people. So let's make fun of him.
Yeah, but well, you know, TOS more often than not had to end with a big laugh scene on the bridge.
Right.
And it just goes on.
And it goes
minutes.
On. And this one gets carried away. You know, they start laughing. And I'm okay with it at first because I'm thinking, well, you know, yeah, this is how TOS often ends. And then they keep laughing. And then, like, doesn't Kirk, like, slap the arm of the captain's chair or something? And then Scotty is about to fall over by the turbo lift door in the back. He can't control himself. He's laughing so hard. Someone goes into the turbo lift.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Laughing. It's
yeah,
it was too much. Another scene that went on too long, right?
Right. And you know when those situations actually do happen. And they do. You know, everybody's laughter reinforces each other. And then you just end up completely on the floor. And usually it's, you know, after watching some YouTube video or something like that. But
yeah,
like the inciting joke for this massive 50-second laugh-a-thon at the end of this episode is Kirk's line, like, "You're a stubborn man, Mr. Spock," and you know Spock doesn't get it, and he's like, "Yes, I am," and then we just everything goes to hell. This entire starship is disabled by roaring laughter and a lot of brass instruments.
Yeah, it's.
I mean,
the funniest joke.
I'm just thinking
heard,
of better ways. Really, right. I'm just thinking of better ways to end the show. I mean, I know we don't have a ready room for the captain to go into, but couldn't Kirk and Spock and, okay, McCoy can be there if he has to be, but couldn't they have like a serious conversation about what Spock did? And couldn't Spock like admit that he had come to a realization? And couldn't Kirk be proud of him? And couldn't we end the episode on like a, look at our characters have made progress
right.
note?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the worst way when someone, you know, I don't know, in a relationship or a friendship, you're someone has been doing something that's really irritated you and they finally realize that it's really been irritating you. I feel like positive reinforcement is what comes into play at this point. Not, oh, you're so funny. I can't believe you used to do that stupid, stupid thing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, if I were Spock, I would never lead anything ever again based on this scene, based on the reaction of everyone to his epiphany.
Yeah, it's like, just think how much the Federation Council is going to crack up when I get those whales and save the world.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, too. I mean, like, there you have a very, very long list of reasons to be somber and serious in this situation because you're exactly. I think you mentioned before someone that they're on their way to deliver these medical supplies. Like, they're not just going to goof off. Like, they're on this mission mm-hmm. that they're now late for. And Kirk got the message not, 15 minutes ago that the crew is back on board, five of them. And he is just all kinds of happy about that. He didn't even ask which ones. I have expected him to say, please tell me that the missing guys are the red shirts. Like, please. Because there is no mention of the fact that Spock has lost, what is it, like 20% of it, like 30, 40% of mm-hmm. his crew?
Yeah. Like, oh, and the crew that went to chase after them, they lost some of those people too.
Yeah.
On the Columbia?
The guys on the search party, like, this ship is about to have, seriously, a day and a half of funeral services and, like, reassignments and shit like that. And this is kind of the beginning of, of the Star Trek, we don't care if you're not in the credits attitude toward the red shirts.
Yeah, for sure. They could have ended it with, like, Spock saying, "Dear Diary, I learned today that if a crew member dies, I should at least acknowledge that he's dead.
Yes.
I should be gentle when I pull the spear out of his back."
Right.
Is he doing it like a Doogie Howser entry on the science station?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, with Scrubs in space, as we talked about a few weeks ago, there has to be learning and hugging at
the end.
Oh, yeah. Oh, great. So I do want to ask you guys real quick. Now, if you were remaking this episode as a Next Generation episode, how would it turn out? How would Picard resolve the situation? Because I was thinking that he would probably invite the Taurians up to the Enterprise. And they would sit down in the observation lounge and then they would discuss, and Picard would try to explain to them why they should not try to eat his crew members, something like that.
Right. Well, I think, Picard would have already had a negotiator on board because, they wouldn't have been taking medicine to a plague planet. They would have been taking a negotiator to some war-torn planet.
Yes, that's true.
So he would go down, he would talk to the Taurians. Probably he'd get most of his friends killed in the process, but by the end of the episode, he would have, negotiated something, and they would have all learned that spears and styrofoam rocks don't solve problems.
Yes, that would have been the final message, right? Yeah.
All of this preceded by Picard, in the teaser at the top of the episode, sizing up the situation and then giving, that steely order, conference.
Right. And
to the conference
staff
room.
Meeting.
and all the while this is going on, Riker is in 10 forward talking to Troy about how he can't decide whether he should leave and take command of the Columbus or not.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. My place is on the bridge.
Right. All right. So, all right. Anything else that you guys want to talk about related to this episode?
Well, let's see. I think we needed to talk about the Star Trek comic, which was, I guess, the genesis of us talking about this episode this week, is that just released on Wednesday as we recorded was Star Trek Ongoing number 3, which starts the Galileo 7 storyline in the Abramsverse. Now, Chris, I believe you've read it. Is that right?
I have read it, yes.
So what did you think, overall? You were a little iffy on what they did with Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah, okay. Well, what do I think about it? As with the other ones, I think it's very well produced. I think the art is great. Voices are spot on. But as with the first two issues of Star Trek Ongoing, This is the first half of the reimagining of the Galileo 7, and they play it pretty straight. So let's just give everyone a quick spoiler alert that we're going to just talk a little bit about a couple things here. So if you don't want to hear this, you can skip ahead. Or if you have the enhanced podcast, we'll put a chapter marker. You can skip over this, but skip to the next chapter.
Latimer dies.
Yes, no! Latimer dies. That's right.
I didn't tune out fast enough. Now I'm spoiled.
And get this. He gets stabbed in the back with a giant spear.
No.
In one of the really most awesome panels, I was showing this panel to Michael before the show. It's like a silhouette showing the spear going straight through.
It actually is very cool. It's really nicely done. Yeah. There's not much different, you know, at this point. I mean, instead of Yeoman Mears, Yeoman Rand is back, and they look at her and they say, "Yeoman Rand," and reading it as text, you know, without any voice inflection, at first I took it as them being like shocked that she's there. It's like Tasha Yar showing back up or something like that.
Fourth season or something.
Whereas I think the intention is simply he's asking, you know, "Are you okay?" But that's kind of it. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of stuff. I mean, like Bones goes with Spock to check when Latimer is killed. So the question is going to be, again, how is this going to be resolved and how does it play into the movie?
Right.
It's, you know, the usual case. Yeah. What did you think about it, Greg?
And the, you know, what this one really did for me was we talked about the difference in this episode particularly between concept and execution. And I think where No Man Has Gone Before, the execution was actually up to the level of the concept. Mm-hmm. I didn't have as many problems in that one of just plain cheesy or bad things. This episode really suffered. And so what the comic's able to do is strip away a lot of the cheesy things, add a lot to it. We see the shuttle crash. We really deal with whatever the guy's name is on the bridge, the Galactic High Commissioner. That's dealt with a little bit more seriously, and he's not just a ticking time bomb. And so I'm able to, what I did was I read the comic first and then watched the episode again. And I felt like reading the comic, I was getting at the core of the story. And I felt like it was focused on the elements that were most important. So in that one, it's really successful as a comic to me. Of course, I'm looking forward to seeing how it concludes it. But as far as it is, this is another great entry in the ongoing comic series.
Now, how would you resolve it to make it different from the original episode? And Michael, you can chime in here, even though you haven't had a chance to read the comic. If you were resolving it in the alternate timeline to make it different from what happened in the prime timeline of the original series, what might you do?
Greg, you can go ahead there.
Well, let me answer first, and then I can let you know that the comic number, you know, first half sort of ends right after Latimer's dead, and they bring him back to the ship, and it sort of ends with a silhouette of the Taurians coming for them. So what I'm looking forward to seeing is them playing up that threat a lot more. You know, it feels like on the original show, they maybe had money for one costume, so we could see one of them at a time, obviously, they had a lot of interns that could toss the spears onto the stage for them.
Yeah.
So hopefully those elements will be dialed back, and we'll see more of them at a time. Maybe we'll actually see them, and you know, you can actually be scared by their appearance rather than just sort of seeing them from the distance as sort of a, you know, Bigfoot holding a styrofoam rock. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing is really. Because what this episode needed was more emotion. You know, you needed to be feeling what the crew was feeling. Whereas I felt more like I was feeling whatever Kirk was feeling on the bridge, where he was very aloof to the whole thing. And he wasn't feeling it because he wasn't down there. He wasn't realizing that they were in a really tense situation. So I'm hoping to feel the emotion and then through that come to the same catharsis that Spock did.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense, and the I feel like that we were kind of robbed in the episode from really feeling too much of a danger from the Taurians because so much of their, you know, stuff was censored. Apparently, Wachang's makeup was just terrifying, too terrifying for 1967 television. banned in Boston. But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and hop on that with you there, Greg. I think those, I wouldn't make many changes to the story itself. It's a wonderfully strong story. It's just the execution, as you guys said, was a bit off in the episode itself.
Yeah, it's a great script, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The script could be improved slightly, but it's a really great script, and I feel like they were really hamstrung. So this is a comic I'm really looking forward to seeing part two of, whereas I feel like they changed the ending of Where No Man Has Gone Before in ways that they didn't really need to, but were maybe based off of the younger Kirk. I feel like Spock can sort of go through the same, you know, the same arc that he did in the original. He doesn't need to approach the angle differently, being Zachary Quinto.
Yeah. Yeah, that all makes sense to me, too. You're very correct in that the comic, by stripping out all the cheesiness, really puts you in touch with the story a lot more of what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Although a lot of that cheesiness, people, don't get us wrong here. I mean, we've made a lot of fun of this episode today talking about it, but the cheesiness is a lot of what is endearing about the original series as well. You know, so
absolutely.
So,
oh, sure.
It's I think what it is a lot of the cheesiness is what makes it fun to watch these episodes, and then the scripts and the message behind them is what makes it fun to discuss them, and you know, to write articles about them, and you know, to create sites like Trek FM like we do. But the comic does take a much more serious approach to this story, thanks to the fact that in the comic, there are no interns off frame or right off page, you know, just lobbing spears at random into the air in the hopes that they might hit something.
Well, if they are interns, they're throwing arms are pretty good, judging by how far that spear went into Latimer's chest.
Maybe they're like a backup quarterbacks from the NFL or something, right?
Right.
Throwing that in. Okay, well, it's been fun talking about the Galileo 7 today, and we'll come back soon and talk about some more TOS.
That sounds great. I had a brief question before we close. Can someone more educated than I describe the significance of the title? I mean, is that, you know, is there another 7 that occurred before this that were more famous? Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're going for, and it feels like it is a reference to something. I'm not entirely sure. I know that this is a sort of a remake of an old sci-fi. I believe it's a movie called Five Came Back.
Yes, yeah.
So I think on some level they're using that 5. They're using the 7. Chris, are you aware of something more deep than that?
I'm not sure. Like you said, it does seem like there is probably something like that going on. Of course, there's the obvious fact that there are 7 people.
7 crewmen,
and
sure.
The Galileo shuttle, I believe, is actually shuttle number 7 as well.
You've got
that connection that it's shuttlecraft number 7, and there are 7 people aboard.
There's 7 aboard.
Yeah,
right.
But there very well may be some other reference going on there that I'm not quite aware of.
Yeah, the only thing it makes me think of is that it's 1986 and the Challenger disaster.
Exactly,
the Challenger 7.
I was just pulling that up on my iPad because I was thinking, weren't there 7 people on Challenger? And I've heard that said Challenger 7, but was that a reference to Star Trek?
I don't know,
or is that a thing
that people say that we don't know about? Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I don't know,
but it definitely made me think of that and sort of. You know, the thought that as of yet, you know, no people have been lost in space. That Star Trek sort of dealt with that
Robinsons.
A little bit.
They were lost in space.
Oh, dear.
True.
I got all serious, Chris. We got all serious, and then you had to bring us back.
Sorry. I felt like we were in danger of getting
too
serious.
Will Robinson. Thank you.
Oh,
I'm sorry, Greg. Go ahead with your seriousness.
No, it's fine. It's fine. No, I was just, you know, this, it very much felt like a space shuttle crew on the ship's not, it's a little bit smaller, I think, than the space shuttle actually, but you have that tight quarters and obviously there are differences, but I felt like this had some emotional impact for me after Challenger in Colombia.
Absolutely. Yeah, just from that title, like it just puts you in that mindset.
Yeah, which is
it
really
why it's
does.
So jarring to see Captain Kirk, you know, see this close up on William Shatner's face. Like, Captain, right. they're transporter room reports five. Five? Only five? Why? What happened to the other two? No, none, we don't get any of that. Just oh, no. Good. I hope Spock and McCoy.
Right. You know, my best friends. I'm not even going to ask if, right. if
they're among
okay.
the two missing.
You're forgetting, guys, that Kirk had already read the script, so he knew who was coming back.
That's a good point. You're right. You're right. That is a good point.
Important thing to remember. All right. Well, Michael, thanks for joining us today. It was great having you on the show with us.
Guys, thank you for having me. I had a ball.
All right. Yeah. Hope you had fun and hope you'll come back and talk with us some more. And don't forget that you're supposed to be working on that imitation of Captain Picard playing Captain Kirk. And we are expecting to hear that on a future Ready Room.
That is right. I will be happy to be your dancing monkey. At any time, guys.
All right.
No, I will make that happen for you.
All right. Well, are there any places that you want to tell people where to find you around the web?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at at Fats Rikerbeard, which is spelled like it sounds. I'll have to explain that story at some point if anybody asks.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that actually. Now, is that an actual beard or is that a beard wig? Like Greg was going,
like Greg has today. it is a that was an actual beard in that shot in my avatar. I'll tell you the full story, but that's where you can find me on the internets when I'm not writing for Trek FM.
All right, and everyone, check out the new series that Michael is writing on Trek FM. It's called Living in the Future, and writing about technology and how the technology we see on Star Trek is becoming a part of our lives, how it's developed over time. The first one was a very interesting one about communicators. And Michael, before we go, just tell everyone real quick about this phone that you managed to pick up that you talk about in the feature.
In the column there. I was on eBay. I had a very, very fortunate timing instance where I came across this auction that was ending in like 2 days for this prototype Nokia cell phone designed in-house at Nokia in the form of a Starfleet communicator, an original series communicator with a brass lid and, you know, custom software, custom art. You can read all about it and see the photos in the article. But I I got, you know, bidder's fever, and I stayed on eBay, and I kept setting new limits for myself. Don't ever do this, by the way. I could seriously have bought, like, a used car with the amount of money I spent on this stupid communicator.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
it was a very, very dumb financial decision. But you know what? I recovered. I have a roof over my head. It was just so worth it. I've never seen an auction come up for another one. I know there are either 12 or 14 that were produced. And I don't know anything about the others except for the fact that J.J. Abrams apparently was given one as a gift. So I have the same phone as J.J. Abrams. That makes me feel good. Because I liked the new film, but please don't tack me to the wall for that.
Right, and the next step is for you to get as much money as J.J. Abrams, right?
Right, yeah, right. That's next on the to-do list.
Well, Greg, I think it was a great idea that you had to talk about the Galileo 7, even if we were a little unfocused in our discussion, but it was fun nonetheless, and I'm glad Michael could join us today, too.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like our discussion may have gotten lost in a quasar-like phenomenon a little bit, but I think we found our way and eventually talked about some of the main points we were hoping to get to.
Right, we did. And you know, the way that we finally got to those points was that we converted the phasers as an alternative energy source that thrust us forward into our points. And that's one of the great moments of the episode that I think we failed to talk about.
I think we did. Oh, well. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Well, thank God that Scotty was staying focused while we were recording the episode and making sure that we kept ourselves on track.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, if you have anything to share with us, your thoughts about the episode, The Galileo 7, or any of the other things we talked about on the show today, Or if you happen to work for Tide and you're interested in sponsoring the show, you can always reach us through our website. Just go to trek.fm/contact and you can send us a text message. You can also call us at 646-652-TREK if you'd like to leave us a voicemail. Then you'll find us on Twitter, where we talk about Star Trek around the clock. We're at the very easy-to-remember username, TrekFM. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
Yep, I'm Greg Harbin on Twitter. That's GREGHARB as in boy, IN. And you'll find me, you know, mostly talking about board games or knitting. They're very exciting topics.
It's riveting stuff there, Greg, you've got going on on your Twitter feed. So, all right. Well, everyone, you'll find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's Brian with the Y. And you'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM and on G+ using our own short link, which is hyperchannel/TrekFMG+. And while you're around our site, be sure to check out all the things that we have going on there. Feature articles in the captain's logs and games such as Trek Trivia at trek.fm/TrekTrivia. And be sure you vote in the polls as well. And I think this next poll is going to be something about Greg's impressions. I'll have to go back and make sure I get that one right. So,
it's very important.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for the Ready Room this week, Greg. I'm going to head back out real quick. I need to bury Lattimore's body before we take off and try to get the attention of the Enterprise.
Yeah, Chris, I think it's time to lob a spear onto it, because the Ready Room is done.